Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. The opinions expressed on this show are those of myself, not those of Crown Talking Drums or any of the sponsors of the program. That being said, we have somewhat of a controversial subject that we're talking about today. We're not going to limit ourselves to the one topic, but one of the quickest ways to develop a heated conversation is to bring up the subject of white supremacy. White supremacy. There are those that say there is no white supremacy, and there are others that are scratching their heads and wondering how in the world can a rational person say that there is no concept of white supremacy. I don't believe that it exists. That's my feeling. And the reason that I don't is because most people do not understand, do not know, have never been exposed to true history. True history. Because what we see all along is a fabrication of history as some people present it. I don't think they even see it in this light. But we have to realize that our system and what we are learning is told by someone that is not us. And we need to change this. This is one of the reasons that we have this program. We have a website called AmazingBlackHistory.com. And we started this showing the superlatives from the race. But that is not an accurate picture of who anybody is. You have to walk around this monument. You have to walk around history and see it from all different sides, all different aspects, in order to truly understand what's taking place. What occurred to me, and we have people that don't want to talk about race. They put it as if it's a taboo subject in America. We don't talk about race. That is the problem, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. And I do hope that we have younger people listening, because these are the formative states. Those adults that are listening should allow their younger children to see and become critical thinkers. Critical thinkers. That's something that we have left out of the equation. And it's something that, although we are a great country, has led to us being less than we can be. Less than we can be. Because a team is composed of many different players. America is composed of many different races. And if we don't allow each and every one, each individual, not on the basis of race, but as an individual, develop to their fullest extent, we're cheating ourselves and them out of the benefits of what they have brought to the country. We have been created by a supreme creator, and that creator was not trying to pull a joke and make an inferior race. There are skin differences, the hair texture differences, but that is not the brain. That is not the heart. That is not who we are, because we can change most of those. We can do things to change the color of our hair. We can do things to change the appearance of our eyes, colored contacts, and every manner of what we do we can change except for our skin color. And some people have even been able to do something about that. But that is artificial. That is a covering. That is putting a person inside of an automobile. We sometimes think that just because you are driving an old clunker, that you have nothing, or that if you're in a nice car, that you have everything. All that is opening a door and sitting yourself inside. Your heart, your mind, your brain functions don't change in the way that we're thinking about. And that's what we have to be aware of, ladies, gentlemen, boys, and girls. Everybody, and I'm not trying to be funny in terms of the gender. I'm old. I don't know all of the LGBTQ and all of those. And I am not making fun of those people, because many of the advances that have taken place as a result of just those people allowing them, just like anybody else, to reach their maximum potential. Sometimes we just don't know. And when we don't know, okay, we think. We are torturing a lot of people because of the expression. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole today. But we have to look at what a person brings to the party. What is their mind? What is their soul? When I worked as a law enforcement officer, I depended on a woman every day that I worked. Why? Because my vest that would save my life was developed by a woman. Kevlar was developed by a woman. If we had our way about it, we would disregard things made by women. That's based on gender, not by race. But we have intersectionalism where we sometimes trying to hold one group down over another. We spend so much time doing that we don't allow people to fully develop. We look at Madame Curie, the first person to win Nobel Prizes in two different categories, a woman. We have, and I spent a lot of time when I first started the program, when I first started looking at the subject of race, looking for the superlatives. But I did not pay attention to what happens around that entire concept. I didn't realize that we had segregated neighborhoods in large part because of our government and because of policies that were put in place. And there are people that do not realize this, both black, white, and all nationalities, Native Americans, Asians, you name it, because we have done a very poor job of educating people on what's happened. Many of these are subjects that we need to be ashamed of. We should be ashamed of. And if we were adults and looked at it, we would definitely be ashamed of it. We would go back, if we could, and change many of these things. Sometimes they look as if they're accidental. But when you take them as a whole, they are much more significant than that. They are significant because when we look at our segregated neighborhoods, it started with a policy, it may have started with the policy of redlining on a mass scale. Because I can recall my grandparents had lived in the country. Property owners on both sides of them were white. All around them were white. How can you have a segregated neighborhood without borders touching each other? It's a question. But what we found as housing became in short supply, the concept of redlining, where they would actually take a map and draw lines around it, and these lines were intended to for financial reasons. Banks didn't loan money in redlined districts. Who was in those redlined districts? People of color, black people. They were segregated in such a manner. Housing was short for everybody. But the federal government was providing housing for people, but they would not finance either through a public or private loan to people that intended for more than one race to live in an area. In other words, when they built the housing project, and there were two very close to me, they would not have allowed white people to live there. These are people that were looking for homes as well as anybody else. They also had a neighborhood that was segregated. If I had wanted to build houses in this area, I could not borrow money if there were going to be more than one race there. Even as a private investor, I couldn't do it. If I was fortunate enough to buy a house, I couldn't get financing. I couldn't get a loan because it's in that neighborhood that is considered a poor risk. I know people that lived in these neighborhoods. They were as proud of their home as anybody else. But it took sacrifice. There were men and women working 2-3 jobs or more. Every opportunity that they got, they invested in their homes. But so many people couldn't even get a leg up, a start into this concept. And so we end up with people taking advantage of this sad situation. It is a sad situation because we didn't have the money then to finance such things as education. I am looking now, doing a project on historically black colleges and universities. And some people are still wondering, why did we have black colleges and universities? There are plenty of universities around. Yeah, they are, but they were not welcoming. When I graduated from high school, I looked at the possibility of going to a local school in Spartanburg, Wofford College. Wofford was like so many other institutions in the area. At that time, they were not admitting blacks, or if they were, they were very quiet about it. And I think it was the former, not the latter, because I would have known about it. I said, no, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm not going to waste anything trying to get into that institution. So we had to have black colleges and universities in order to train some of the sharpest minds on the planet. Some of the sharpest minds on the planet. We still have over 100 historically black colleges and universities today, and they are welcoming not just to black people, but to all people. And this is what we find. Black legislators, senators, representatives on the House and the national level tend to be inclusive and do things for all people. When we look at Robert Smalls, for example, who stole the Confederate ship Planter because they didn't think that he had enough intelligence to be able to operate that ship, but he could operate it every bit as well as a white captain. So he dressed in the white captain's clothing, and he was able to figure out and he knew the exact sequence necessary to get out of the harbor of Charleston safely. He did so. But one of the things that he pushed for was public education for all kids. At one time, it was something for the well-to-do. But we have made progress, not the ultimate progress, because there are other countries outperforming us in the area of education of their students. It's going to come back to haunt us. We sometimes look at only the facilities. But yes, the facilities were much, much, much different. In most places, they spent from 2 to 10 times as much on the white students as they did on the black. And we saw this change in the Brown v. Board of Education cases combined in Brown v. Board. One of the primary cases came out of South Carolina. And due to the good technical work of Charles Hamilton Houston, a well-deserving lawyer who worked in the area of civil rights, we were able to reverse Plessy v. Ferguson. And Plessy v. Ferguson is argued as sometimes the most stupid decision by the Supreme Court. And that's saying something, seeing some of the decisions that come out of that court. But what we see is we're playing a catch-up game. Because in most cases where we could have owned homes, now we have a case, and if you look at AmazingBlackHistory.com, I believe the lady's name was Carrie House, H-O-U-S-E. And she was a slave who had been freed, crossed the Ohio River into free country and lived there, and was tricked into coming back, was captured and returned to slavery. Most people don't realize that free people, freed black people, had to leave the area, had to leave the state within 1 year, or they were subject to be re-enslaved. And this is what happened to Carrie House. Carrie House then was able to sue. She sued and won reparations, increase in value. Now, banks will loan you money for a car, and a car depreciates the minute, the second that you drive it off the lot. But for a house, no, you're in that red line district. And there were covenants that said homeowners could not even sell their home to a black person, that you could not live there unless you were a servant of somebody. This is America, folks, and we don't know this. These are the start, and these are some of the advantages that come up to whites that don't come up to other people. And we who are affected by it see it, and we think, they have got to know is the situation. When it comes to law enforcement, and I was a law enforcement officer for 28 years, I see it. I didn't always see it in days past. But we find people that are down on their luck because they're not given the same jobs, even with the same or greater qualifications. I saw this when I was in college. We had a new company come into Salisbury, North Carolina, where I was going to school. And they paid what was called decent wages at the time. And it was a chemically-based company, Fiber Industries at the time. And I thought, hey, with 3 years of chemistry, I should be great in that plant. Four of us went out to apply, three of us with chemistry, 3 years of chemistry. One was a history major. By the time we got back home, they were calling the history major. And we said, what did you do that we didn't do? He said, I just put down that I had a high school diploma. They did not want us. We were overqualified. Maybe we were ambitious. And that was a reason that they did not want us. It sounds stupid then, and it sounds stupid now. But it was a fact. This is what we're talking about when it comes to the subject of white supremacy. They had opportunities that we did not have. They were able to purchase homes. They were able to use that asset to further themselves and their children because they were able to borrow money. When we go back to Carrie House, she was able to send her son to school, to college, to law school, and her son practiced law until his death at the age of 95. People that have the capabilities of doing it. but they don't get the opportunities to do it. This is what I'm talking about. Many of us, black people, brown people, yellow people, red people, white people, have never been exposed to this. And we look at it as if it is something new, but it's old. When we walk into a house at night, we sometimes are afraid. Why? Because we don't know what's there. We don't know what's inside. You know, we could be walking in, and I remember one time as a law enforcement officer, I was going to a house, and there was a front porch. You had to go onto the front porch to knock on the door. And I didn't notice a black dog laying there until I heard a low growl. Yeah, sometimes that could happen because we cannot see everything. But we have allowed ourselves to be hoodwinked. We have allowed ourselves to be put in this situation, some of us voluntarily, some of us not, because we were not exposed to this. I was in that dark space until by chance I was in California and learned about black families in California that were able to prosper, own land, and profit from that land. There is a possibility that they could get that land back. There is information that I put out. Now, many times you're listening because I have posted on Facebook. I put links to how to contact us. And while I'm on that particular subject, let me mention something to you. Many of you are listening to us on your device, your computer, maybe even your cell phone. But that does not allow me to see you on my dashboard. The only way I see you on my dashboard is if you call in and I can see you on my dashboard and I can recognize you. I can open your microphone. We can have a conversation and you can bring up where you agree or disagree, where you have questions, because this is not intended to be a one-way street. We learn because we can ask questions. We sometimes get into school, and one of the things that I've noticed is that many times when we are outnumbered and we fall for the fallacy that basically says that we haven't done anything because they don't tell us about our accomplishments, that we haven't done anything because they don't tell you about the roadblocks that have been placed in our way, that we come away with a skewed idea of who we are. And it detracts from both of us, both of us. And I'm talking about white and non-white. Why do I say that? Because when we look at a state like Virginia, they had their 1924 purity laws, racial purity laws. They recognized only two races and white. Native Americans are not white. They are, under that law, considered as black because they're not white. And we find that this percentage of black blood necessary to call you black was extremely small. In some cases, it was 1/8, 1/16. In some cases, they proclaimed one drop. Now, when we consider the average person to have 94,000 drops of blood, that means it's going way back. This is what gave us Plessy V. Ferguson. Because of his great-grandparents, of his eight great-grandparents, one was black. Plessy didn't look black at all, not in his hair texture, not in his skin color, his eye color, or anything else. And they thought, how absurd that we have a law that says a streetcar conductor has to determine your race as to whether you get on the good, clean car or the one that is unkept, which is reserved for non-whites. And what we found there is that so many people were claiming in their ancestry that they went back to Pocahontas, that they put in what's called a Pocahontas exception in this law. You could have Native American blood and still be considered white. Anything else, not. I'm reading a book called, I believe, The Virtue of Cain, C-A-I-N, and it's about a black legislature, and it's his descendants, a very high-ranking official in Microsoft, who decided to do some research into his ancestry. He had been told that the color in their skin was because of Native American ancestry until he began to look. And he found that in Edgefield County in South Carolina, which was a booming area back in the day, that his ancestor was not Native American. Ancestor was black. Now, he progressed because he was able to pass as white. But under the law, he was not. Because any proof of any black ancestor did that. And so we have people that are walking around today not realizing that they have black ancestors. Because we have fallen for the fallacy that you cannot get any light skin from darkness. That's wrong. When we look at ancestry, we look at genealogy, we find in many cases throwbacks to this. We remember Angela Davis. Angela Davis in the 60s, 50s, and 60s stood out because she was a strikingly beautiful woman with a afro that extended to the width of her shoulders. Beautiful sister. And Henry Louis Gates recently did a segment on his show in which he used DNA to trace her family. And this is the reason that some people are afraid to do it now. Angela Davis, who at one time was jailed because of a connection with the Black Panthers. The Black Panthers were actually doing lots of good because they were feeding kids in the neighborhood. They were powering kids, but it scared white people. And this led to a diminished interest in them. But Angela Davis can trace her ancestry back to the Mayflower, the white people that came over here. Tina Mowry, same thing. And these are people that had absolutely no idea of it. So what we have, and we have people such as Carolyn Randall Williams, noted black academician, very well respected in the academic commission, in an academic society, because of her knowledge. Her great-great-grandfather was Edmund Pettus. That name sound familiar? That's the bridge of the segregationist who has a bridge named for him in Selma. And this is where the Selma to Montgomery march starts. It is an interdependence, and it is an interdependence based on someone's idea, someone's concept of what's taking place. It is not right, it is not true, and it detracts from all races, all races. When we look at the building of the railroads across America, this was a great thing. And when we see the picture featuring the laying of the Golden Spike in Promontory Point, Utah, we see nothing but white people there. Most of the labor for the railroads came from Asian people who were hard at work, lost many lives as they drilled through solid rock, as they drilled through mountains, as they bore tunnels, as they worked in this hazardous industry. Give credit where credit is due. Take advantage of what is available to them. When we don't do that, we're not being fair to anyone. Anyone. So as we bring up this subject, just as I find ignorance on my part, because I was not told, I thought that all of my ancestors were picking cotton. I have found that my ancestors were owned by William Henry Gist. Who is William Henry Gist? He has a plantation in Union, South Carolina, called Rose Hill. And why is that important? Because he was a governor of South Carolina that signed the secession order that led to 11 states forming a separate country called the Confederate States of America. They went to war with the United States of America. And yet and still, we are putting up statues. We're asking as if these insurrectionists, because they fought against America. We don't know our history because we don't realize that in order to be admitted back to the Union, there were penalties placed on them. And they had to come in and pledge allegiance to America. But many of these people, the white supremacists, particularly those that we call white supremacists, because they're out there. Some of them wear hoods, robes. Some of them wear suits, three-piece suits, two-piece suits. Some of them we don't recognize because they're not in uniform. But their minds are. This is why the mind is so important. And we have people that have never been told that we have fought in every war that America has. We fought in the American Revolutionary War. Why? Because the people here did not want to be taxed without representation, and they were not represented, but they were taxed. We allow that to happen when we go through our Electoral College. We have 600,000 people in Wyoming who have an equal vote to the 40 million people in California. They can cancel the entire state of California out. That's over 50 times as many people. But the shame of it all is that we have more people in Washington, D.C. that have no vote when it comes to the Electoral College. And yet and still, we preach one man, one vote, one woman, one vote, one person, one vote. Has not always been the situation in this country. Now, let me make sure, because we're deep into the program, the way to get on my screen is to call in. Those of you that are listening, even on your cell phone, that are using an internet connection, I can't see you. But you need to call 646-668-8217. That number again is 646-668-8217. I suggest you save it, maybe even put it in your cell phone so that you can switch over. If you have something that you want to ask, if you have something that you want to say, if you want to disagree, if you want to agree, do that. This is a program of, by, and for the people. And we don't learn things unless we ask questions. Very often I found myself in classes, even on a professional level, because I worked as a chemist. And I didn't want to ask a question and appear dumb. I'd rather remain dumb and have people guess. No, that's not the way to do it. I go to school so that I can learn. If I am too timid to ask a question, I remain dumb. But if I have enough fortitude about me I can learn. That's something that can't be stolen from you. This is why we talk about not only the successes, but the difficulties with which we have had to endure. And some of them have been humongous, because I've known people that were brilliant, brilliant, I tell you, but they were not interested in the materials that were being presented. Let me tell you something that is just heartbreaking. We sometimes criticize our children because they may not be making the most stellar grades in school. And then we hear them when a song comes on, maybe a song that we're not very enamored with, and they can repeat every word of it. And we are distressed because they know the words to this song. But we are responsible for that. How? It shows, one, that they are very intelligent and can pick up information. But we don't utilize what we have just heard. We go off half-cocked because we're saying they can do this, but they can't do that. We have, and I dare anybody listening to this program to tell me that they can't remember songs that they were taught as a kid. Why don't we turn that around and teach using music? Why don't we turn it around and make it something that they are interested in? Even if it's not on the curriculum at school, when they find out the joys of learning, of education, of finding out answers, they will set themselves on fire trying to find the answers to the world's problems. This is a fact. I can remember songs that I learned before I was 5 years old. Still today, we need to utilize what we can. We are smarter than we sometimes allow ourselves to be. Take advantage of it. Those of you who have children, find out what they're interested in and cater to that interest. Cater to that interest. I could take a block of wood from a house being built, and that was my car, that was my truck, that was my everything, because I had to use my imagination. Kids can develop an imagination. They can develop a desire. I remember a dictionary we had in our home. It was an unabridged dictionary. There were some pages in there that I just absolutely adored. There was one with lots of fish on it. And what I did is this thing was probably hundreds and hundreds, maybe even thousands of pages. I could find it because I was interested in that, and I knew enough. I didn't know how to read. I didn't know how to write, but I knew how to find that page. And what that does is that spurs an interest. If we find that there is an interest in something, the first book I ever read from cover to cover was about Louis Armstrong, the trumpet player. I played trumpet in the band. I was interested in that book. I got started reading full articles. I used to read short articles all the time because I had an encyclopedia, a World Book Encyclopedia. Still have it now. And it's been 75 years. Still have that set of encyclopedias. I don't consult them as much because there are other ways of me learning. But those were my entry into the world. Every time I'd go to the bathroom, I'd grab a book. I didn't care what the alphabet was, but I'd turn to something. And if it was a short article and struck my attention, I read it. This is what we want to do with our children. We want them to be interested in learning. We need to develop a concept that says we do what we have to do before we do what we want to do. I, as a kid, came home, I wanted to play. But I have seen kids that didn't have the abilities that I have that outperformed me in school. because they had a set routine. They did their homework while it was fresh in their minds. They didn't have the stress the next day. Oh, I forgot to do this. I forgot to do that. And so you're all keyed up. And so you cannot learn properly when you're worried about the next class and getting the work done that you should have done yesterday. We get to the point where with less effort, not only can we stay ahead, but we don't get stressed by trying to catch up. We do this by reading ahead a little bit. Even in mathematics, we have an idea. We develop the concept of how do we resolve this problem? How do we read it? How do we look at the solution? All we're doing is building up a muscle, folks. We're building up practices. We are gearing ourselves towards success, the success that our Creator made for us. Our Creator did that. We learned because we explore. We learn because we have an interest. Cater to those interests. If you have a child that's interested in cooking, help them. Get cookbooks. Do things that make it easy for them to do that. They're sports. Oh, you can't do nothing but sports, but you find that there are people like Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson is now in a group that's bidding for the Washington Commanders, a $6 billion franchise, $6 billion. He is in that mix now. Yes, he played basketball, but he did things other than basketball. But you have to be interested in it. We have so many people that get out there. All they're interested in is sports. They make the big money, but they don't know how to handle that money. And people flock around them, and they like that. But then when it's all gone, so are their friends. Quote, friends. Hanger-ons that were just vultures, so to speak. We want to be able to start our own businesses. We talk about those people that are working, and I admire anybody that works an honest job. There are people that started very successful careers saying, do you want fries with that? Because they had a plan. I was talking to a student of my father's, and he was Lee Haney. Lee Haney was Mr. World 8 times. He beat the record held by Arnold Schwarzenegger at 7. But as we were talking about my father just a few weeks ago, my father would ask him, what do you want to do? And he could tell him what he wanted to do. And he is living that dream now because he dared dream it then. He dared to do it. And I dare you to do it too. We often dream too small. We don't dream large enough because we are capable of so much more. When we allow this concept to creep in that we are incapable and other people do the same thing, there are partnerships that could be formed because we often don't look at people as if they can contribute anything to what's taking place. This is not fair to anybody of any race. Even within the race, we have people that do that, think that, no, they can't change, they can't do this, they can't do that. And it's all based on a false premise, the premise of white supremacy. And what is so sad about this entire situation is that we have people that are able to take advantage of it, but they don't see it. And the reason they don't see it is because they've had it all of their lives. They have had it, they have been indoctrinated into the concept that everybody has an equal chance. Everybody doesn't have an equal chance. We need to make sure that everybody has an equal chance. Parents, you need to be more concerned with what your student is being taught rather than looking for reasons to run up the schoolhouse and show out. You need to make time at the beginning of the year to make sure that the teachers know that you are involved in their children's education, that you want the best. There are times when I had to go to the school because things weren't going the way I thought they should. But I did some things that I think are helpful. I didn't go up there to show out, to show my kid that we were going to jump on the teachers if something happened. We went there to problem solve. Their reason for going to school, their number one reason was to learn, to be able to deal with situations and consequences on their own. My goal was that if I'm no longer here, that they can resolve their own problems, that they know how to learn. What do I mean by you know how to learn? We are given books at the beginning of the year. Everybody has an equal opportunity to read that book, to learn from that book. But so often we look at it as a chore. If we were interested in it, we would stay up with it. The worst thing that you can do is get behind in a class, get behind in learning. But we develop the capability of learning, we can catch up much, much easier. So I implore parents, not only do you want your kids to do it, I saw, because I not only do I do AmazingBlackHistory.com, but I have a page on Facebook. It's called Amazing Black History. It's a page. And I have neglected it for a while, but I'm trying to go back and try to post every day a short video. And I see a young lady that was on. In fact, it will probably be featured tomorrow. Go on, look at Amazing Black History on Facebook, and you will see her. She had retired, and at the age of 63, she went back to school because she had made a promise to her mother. And she was pregnant at 14, gave birth at 15, got married at 16, had a successful career. But she had an unfulfilled promise that she had made to her mother. And she went back to school. And she was in her late 60s when she got that degree. We're capable, folks. We're capable. She ran into her granddaughter on the campus. Her granddaughter knew her involvement in the community and asked her, what was she doing there? And she said she was a student. And it just floored her granddaughter to no end. We have the capabilities. We can do it. There are roadblocks, and we often give up. And I think of life as being like falling in the mud. You can either lay there or you can get up. Successful people have fallen, but they get up one more time than they fell. The option is yours. Do you want to lay there in mud, or do you want to get up and succeed? We allow this concept of white supremacy, and sometimes it's because people are ignorant. And I don't mean ignorant as in not being exposed to, not being exposed to the fact that some of the greatest people around, we use, and I use almost every day, GPS. Not understanding that Dr. Gladys West, a black woman, did so much to establish that for what it is today. Or that Mary Jackson started young black girls programming computers because she was one of the hidden figures. She was behind the space mission that put John Glenn into orbit. When this white man was selected to go and they had everything calculated with a calculator, he didn't trust the computers. He said, have the girls check the numbers. And he was talking about these talented black people like Catherine, like Johnson, that we saw in the movie and the book Hidden Figures. And that book came because the author knew these people, knew what they had done. I cannot fathom how we can go through history and have such things and never see or hear about it in our history books. The greatest mathematicians these women were, and yet and still they couldn't even use the bathroom in the building where they worked. This is part of the racial superiority, the white supremacy. And part of that came about because of Woodrow Wilson. Yes, Woodrow Wilson, President of the United States, a Southerner. Now, I don't mean to lump all Southerners in there because there were bastions of people that did not believe in slavery in the South. When Woodrow Wilson was president, there were black people who had earned supervisory positions, It wasn't a result of affirmative action or anything else. They were given an opportunity. They took it, they seized it, and they performed it successfully. But Wilson couldn't see that. He fired them for no reason except their skin color. He came in and put petitions in the rooms to separate the races. He required separate restrooms. I don't know what he thought they were doing. We see the insurrectionists on January 6th going in and not knowing what a restroom is used for and smearing it on the walls. They weren't doing that. They were capable people who were leaning to prosperity. The Reconstruction period was a time that was intended to ensure the rights of all people. Troops had to go in because, remember, Southerners were willing to die for slavery because it made them rich, filthy rich. And of those people, we sometimes think that every white person benefited from that. They did not. There were less than 2% of the white people who owned slaves. Even at the highest percentage, when we look at the census reports, was 6%, but did not. And yet and still, we have people who are afraid to talk about the subject of race because it may lead to them being related to a slave owner. I don't care if you were related to a slave owner. What I do care about is what's taking place today. If I am fighting for human rights and you don't stand with me, then yeah, I'm going to look at you funny. I'm going to wonder why. I'm going to wonder what's in your head. What are you afraid of? All I want is the opportunity. I don't want the job. I want the opportunity to prove myself in the job. I don't want my kids just to sit in a classroom with you. I want a chance for my kids to excel, to learn, to compete with you, just as everybody else does. That's all we want. White supremacy and the belief of slave owners that they were the best thing that ever happened to the black man because they brought him over here, they worked him from can't see in the morning, they can't see at night. They worked him all day. They worked him hard. They worked him so hard that muscle pulled away from bone. And that's because we can go back and examine some of the skeletons that we have encumbered and where the cemeteries where you have disrespected the dead, disrespected them. And we find this information out. We look at Hamburg, South Carolina. 100 people wanting to vote in the courthouse were killed, slaughtered. When they were surrendering, as they came out, they were either shot and killed or lynched. There's a memorial there now, not to the 100 people that wanted to be fully recognized as American citizens, but to the three white men killed trying to deny people their rights. I can understand that I would be ashamed of it if I were a white person. But what can I do about it now? I can stand up. I can let my voice be known. I can be heard. And I can do what I can do, because I know it's not personal, but it is what God intended. He intended for us to have the opportunities. That's why America was formed. That's why we tell these stories. We tell the stories that everybody had an equal chance. Everybody didn't have an equal chance, but everybody should. As we find ourselves in such a morass now, we're able to see a vast ocean of seaweed. And where did that come from? We made it. How did we make it? Because we don't understand what we're doing. We apply so much nitrogen to our yards that it runs off. It runs into the rivers. It runs into the lakes. It runs into the streams. It runs into the ocean. And it feeds this harmful product that we have there. We need to cut back. We need to understand what we're doing. We think if a little bit is good, a whole lot has to be better. When we wash our dishes, we put an overabundant amount of detergents in, and we don't understand that it is destroying our country. It's destroying the world. Well, it's going to go right back into the system. Yeah, but we have to reprocess things out. We are so dumb that we take medicine and then flushing it down the toilet is getting rid of it. What's it doing? It's getting into our oceans. We're finding that sometimes some of these chemicals, small amounts of them, are doing damage to our fish. They're causing mutations of the sexual organs. They're doing all sorts of damage. And because we can't see it, we prefer not to think about it. The same thing with white supremacy. There are those that think, well, nobody's given me anything. Yeah, try being on the other side of that equation. Try being on the other side of that equation. Now, I'm going to talk for a little bit longer, and I'll open the microphones to your questions. We have a couple of people that are listening, but I want others to join. I do want others to join. You don't have to agree with me. I'm not so whatever that I think that I am the only opinion on earth. I value my opinion, but I value yours as well. We can talk. We can talk as adults. There are people out there. They're probably white people that say, I was not given anything. No, but you were given a leg up in some things. And I'm not arguing with you about it, because I know that there are people that have had a tough road to hoe. There are white people that have depended upon social networks, whether it be welfare or whether it be something else. We have looked for every way that we can to disqualify people. We see every day that there are people that have been unfairly convicted of crimes. And we sometimes think that you pay your debt to society. But the way that we operate this society is not fair, and not fair to all. Because once you have committed certain crimes, you are ineligible to vote. When you look at what Ron DeSantis did, when the people of Florida voted to allow those people that had paid their debt to vote, he set up a trick and arrested people for doing it, even when the state said, you are eligible to do it. This is what we see as one of the effects of white supremacy. When we look at Vermont and Maine, incarcerated, that means in jail, in prison, are allowed to vote because they feel that they're still American citizens. When we don't have the opportunity to vote for people that represent our interest, then we are subjected to that white supremacy. Because you maintain, you find ways to expunge your records and clear it, but you don't pass that information on to others that could benefit. People that are keeping their nose clean, people that are willing to go. When we look at what's taking place, we sometimes look at prosecution on the basis of skin color. I see one of the few opinions that I've read written by Clarence Thomas, and he is very suspect, in my opinion, always has been. But I see a case where he wrote the majority opinion. An individual spent more than spent almost 40 years in prison, wrongly convicted. And overwhelming evidence showed that he was wrongly convicted. And this happens to way more people than we are acknowledging. That Clarence Thomas said there is no pattern. And that what had happened is Thompson, not Thomas, the defendant in this case, had sued, won reparations or won compensation from the state. Clarence Thomas overturned that ruling. And what this man got after almost 40 years in prison, when he was released, he got a bus ticket home, which is probably changed, and $10. That's almost 25 cents a year for being wrongfully incarcerated. That happens. Now, what do you think a man's going to do after he's been out of society for 40 years? Is he going to run down and get a cell phone with $10? No. Can he feed himself for more than a day on $10? No. He can't stay with his people if they're living in public housing because he now has a record and can't live there. I mean, we're feeding him to the lions. This is what needs to stop. This is what needs to change. We think that the only way that we can rehabilitate or offer people an opportunity is to imprison them. Do you know how much it costs to keep a person in prison? We could educate three people for the cost of incarcerating one. And when we educate, they make money, they pay taxes, they participate, they take pride in themselves, their neighborhoods, their country. This is what needs to happen. We can no longer be the depiction, and we got this all wrong. Ostriches don't bury their head in the sand, but they sometimes put them down and leave other parts of their body vulnerable. This is what we're doing, America. We're leaving our rear ends exposed, and we're hiding our head in the sand. We're hiding our head in the sand. We have to wake up to understand what we're doing to our fellow man, and we're doing on a daily basis. That number, again, is 646-668-8217. I want you to write that number down. Because any of the programs on Crown Talking Drums can be contacted using that number. I have a program on Thursday at 7 where I talk about success and what we need for success. We go to school and we don't learn what I consider to be a fundamental principle, and that is the principles of success. We are grooming people to go to work or someone else, which is a form of slavery. Because a slave owner is a person that profits. This is the corporation. And when we look at what's taking place, many of our corporations are paying no corporate taxes. That falls on the poor. The poor. And when we look at such things as the IRS coming in doing audits. Black people are much more prone to be audited. Why? Because they have simple tax returns, and they can't spend the effort to go after the complex taxes of the corporations. They end up paying nothing. We build the roads. We build everything else. It's on those people making less than $400,000 a year is where we place the burden. Is that fair? Is it fair? We don't have the opportunity sometimes to participate in programs that bring these returns. And when you are making your money off of the returns, off of the money that was left to you, you have a great opportunity because you're not paying the same tax rate. We have millionaires and billionaires paying at a lower tax rate than the janitor, the nurse, those people that are holding society together. Even the person that's sweeping the street often has a higher tax rate than the millionaires and the billionaires. Something is wrong with that system. We could fix so much, but we need to become involved. We can no longer sit back and talk about what needs to be done, what they should have done. It's we. What can we do? We see in Tennessee, legislatures elected by the people being kicked out for some faulty thinking on the part of those people in power. Now, why did they get in power? Because most of the people in that state don't vote for that party, but they gerrymandered it. That means that they have made the districts, they've packed them and they've cracked them. And if you look at my post on gerrymandering, you'll see what I'm talking about. In America, most people don't vote for the party of the 45th president. But they have allowed this to take place. When we look at the Electoral College, Wyoming has their interest, but their interest nullified the interest of 40 million people. 600,000 people nullify the vote of 40 million people because of our Electoral College. Washington, D.C., who has more people than the entire state of Wyoming, are left out of the process altogether. These are some of the things that we need to think about. There are brilliant minds out there. Some of you listening have solutions, or at least you have the ability to discuss it and come up with a solution. We are so partisan in this country that we don't talk about things. I'm a gun owner, but I don't think that every person around, regardless of mental capacity, mental thoughts, mental anything else, needs to have them. Some of the people in uniform don't need them. And I know, I've worked there, I've seen them. I've talked to a couple of people. I saw a gentleman who was scared out of his wits after an arrest. And when I came to assist him, he became emboldened, and he just talked down to this person that he was shaking in his boots at a minute before. That needs to change. We have courageous men and women who are representing and doing what is necessary. Doesn't take many people to change it. Some of these are going to have to do like the legal community does. May have to expel some, may have to expose some. But the brunt of that is taken out in the black community. When we see Tyree Nichols and what happened to him, and it happens because people don't value what they don't know about. And we sometimes fall into that category ourselves. This is why the program is dedicated to bringing out the best, showing what we have overcome, and showing what you can do to help us overcome. Artemis 2 is going to circle the moon. There's going to be a person of color. There's going to be a woman up there. Every bit as capable of, as anybody else. But for years, we have excluded these people. Remember, we wouldn't even have a space program, or we would be way behind if it had not been for these black women mathematicians. When we look at, there's a Navy hidden figure, and I have her on the site. And it's not Murgatroyd. It's something similar. I'll think of her name later. But it took 2 years. It was taking 2 years for a crew to design a ship. President comes up and says, no, we've got to cut it to 2 months. Now, while they're screaming like a pig under a gate, to make a long story short, Montague, her last name is Montague, wanted to be an engineer and couldn't find a school, a college in Arkansas that allowed black people to become engineers. But she plotted out a plan and went to work as a civilian in the Navy and learned computers. When that project was placed on her shoulders alone, she wrote a program. And from the time she pushed the start button until a complete ship design came out the other end of that computer, 18 hours and 36 minutes. This is what we need to be developing, and it doesn't make any difference what color it comes from. Need to take advantage of the best that we have to offer. The best that we have to offer. And that doesn't come with a skin color. It comes with a heart. It comes with an opportunity. When we look at the Statue of Liberty that says, give us your poor, your tired, your huddled, we leave out the most important sentence, which is the one above it, that said, you keep your best. You keep your best and give us the rest. We will make it happen. And then we don't. And then we don't. This is a stolen promise. This is a stolen mentality that we pass on, that everybody has that opportunity. Everybody doesn't have it. That number again is 646-668-8217. If you're listening on your computer, if you're listening on your cell phone with an internet connection, I can't see you. I can't give you the opportunity to speak. I can't give you the opportunity to ask your questions, to contribute, to disagree with me, whatever you have. So we'll allow a few minutes to see if anybody comes in. I hope that you understand the question, the topic, the subject that we're talking about. While we have been on that spear point, it hurts. It has our attention. Some of you don't know that it's happening. It's like if a mule is standing on my foot, I may be making all sorts of gyrations. I'm not trying to entertain you. I'm trying to call attention to my subject, my pain. Help me get it over with. I don't care if you own the mule. Help me. By helping me, you help yourself. You help everyone. You help your children. I look at the predicament that we're in. We have people that are slowly leaving us through situations like Alzheimer's. Cure is going to come from a kid. I don't know the color of that kid. My best chance is to have all do the best that they can. The relief that I get may come as a cure. It may come from somebody that develops an apple pie that just brings me a few minutes of enjoyment. It may come from a person that can develop a pair of shoes that don't hurt my feet. It could come in the form of a song that soothes my heart, that gives me inspiration. There's so many of you that fit into those categories. Understand, my friends, that all of this is necessary to make a better world. It may be in coming from finding a use for kudzu, which is a plant that ate the South. It's an indigenous plant. But when we look at our world, we look at fish, for example, and the fish that we are putting our emphasis on are not necessarily the ones that are best for food, but they're the ones that the attention of white people. Don't believe me? Look it up. Look it up. It's there. I can talk about it. But if some of you want to challenge me on that, do it. I don't mind. I've been shot down before, been shot out of the saddle. But this is what we do. We put emphasis on those species that they like, whether it's fish, whether it's animals, whether it's roads, whether it's anything else. Our neighborhoods have been decimated because, yeah, we can uproot them. It's cheaper. Now, it may not be the best route, but it's cheap. When we look at Atlanta, we see that the interstate highway was built just for that. When we look at Tulsa and the Greenwood neighborhood, we see that it has been split, busted wide open by an interstate highway. We see some places where bridges have been built, and they were deliberately built too low to allow buses to bring people from affected neighborhoods to the beaches or something else that could bring enjoyment to people. That's not something to be proud of. That's something that we need to reconsider. As America, we're all in one boat. Let's get the best out of that boat, my friends. As we do this, we're going to briefly open the microphones in case anybody has comments that they would like to share with us, if they have questions, anything else. I see my friend Marshall, a faithful listener, is on. We'll start. I hope that he has been able to learn something from the program. Marshall, are you there?
Yes, sir, Mr. Abercrombie. How are we doing today?
Oh, we're doing great. I'm glad to see you today.
Yes, I'm glad, and I hope you and Ruth and the family and everybody's doing fine, man. I'm just sitting out here in the backyard under the tree listening to you and getting all of this good information from you. You are such an inspiration to us all, not just the black race. You're certainly an inspiration, and you gives information out that helps. Some people be talking just to be talking, but what you saying, what you trying to tell us is that what you telling us, that's the way to make things better. Not, we all know what's going on, but you telling us what can make things better, and that's why I like to listen to you, listen to your program, and I do whenever I can. I miss a couple of days, the wife wanting to be going places, and we singing and everything, but whenever I do have a chance, certainly we'll be listening to you, Mr. Abercrombie. And that race inferiority, that is something that I have a little girl we keep. She is going, she's just in the second grade. Now, she's learning how to speak Spanish, and I think there's a couple of Russians in the class. She's learning how to speak all of those different languages because they are going to school together. And then they, and something else you mentioned, that when God made us all, he never made one race inferior over the other. Now, I don't know where you can find that in a pulpit that they will tell you that, but it's true. It's true. Our lifestyle comes from what we learn. I'm just like my daddy. I'm just like my daddy because he taught me. He taught me. That's why I do what I do, because it was what he taught me. And that's the way children's is today. They talk about, people talk about, well, one is more inferior than the other. No, no. We all were born with the equal mentality through God. And it has nothing to do with what we were born with that I know of, but it's how we are raised.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
How we raised.
Now,
yes.
I think it was last week that we talked about the Ishango bone. And yeah. That was a discovery 18,000 to 20,000 years ago, well before Egypt and all these other countries came up, that showed that in Central Africa, we had systems of counting. And if you dig deep enough, we could multiply and do other things with numbers back then. And yet we persist in thinking that we've never done anything, that we haven't contributed to the world. And this is bad both for us and for them, because we don't understand that. God put us on this planet, and we find that, as far as we know, mankind started in Africa and moved around the world. And sometimes we don't even know how it happened. But Thor Heyerdahl sailed a ship from Africa to the Americas well before Christopher Columbus. And Columbus was able to document information that showed that the people in the Americas were trading with Africans before he ever got here. But we don't pass that on. We pass on this thing of one being superior to another. And let me just mention one thing about the James brothers. While they are in my age group, they are active. They're active today. That's why I like them so much. And my friend and his brother, Leon, are active. They don't just sit around and do anything. I mean, they could be retired. Now, the one thing that is so enjoyable, and I hope that we get to do this again sometime, is the trees at his house provide great shade. He knows how to cook fish, and one day we're going to sit in the backyard and eat fish and drink lemonade. That's one of the best things we could ever have.
And
but,
make them dark eyes tea.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know it all. And that's because we've had to make things because we weren't given things. And we had to work. And we've always worked. And all we wanted was an opportunity. And somebody else thinks that all we want to do is put our feet under their table. I want my own table. I'll invite you over.
Yes.
I don't care, but I just want the opportunity to do that, and I am so excited because the James brothers introduced me to a cemetery in the neighborhood, and you know we had allowed it to grow up in weeds. We have sacred places that should be remembered, and some of the people that are in there need to be remembered. Because we fought the good fight, and we're still fighting it. But we encourage you to join with us. We're not enemies. We're just unenlightened people that are chasing shadows and windmills and things of the nature. We have more in common than we have differences, and we need to do that. But we don't do it because we don't talk about it.
That's
one
right.
One of Marshall's friends, Leon's, mine, is Greg McKee. And Greg has done tremendous amount of research. And Greg is a white guy. And we can't look at everybody with a jaundiced eye. We have to look at the heart and the soul and the intentions of what people are doing. And sometimes our greatest allies don't look like us. Sometimes our enemies look like us. But we have to look past that skin. We have to look into the heart, the mind, the soul, the actions of people. Marshall is
what
always...
What I judge a person by is not what they say, it's about what they do. Now, Greg McKee, he is certainly a good friend of Leon and myself, and he is a good friend of African American. That man do things for us that we sitting back at home and not even doing for ourselves. Now, he has gotten some people together out of Simpsonville and Greenville, and they doing a life history on my brother and myself. And we have met 4 times, have one more time to meet, and they're going to start writing the book. It's going to be on us, Leon and myself, with our life history and our singing career. That is what's brewing right now with us, and we hoping to get together maybe around September and put all of the families in so we can have a grand celebration. And you will certainly
know when and where. You keep us in mind, Marshal, and I do want to make mention of the fact that I believe it's the 31st of May. I think that's the date. We will start our library series again at the Spartanburg Public Library. And I believe that's at 7 o'clock on the 31st, and I'll be talking about black women in the military.
All right.
So those of you that are listening anywhere close to Spartanburg, come out and join us on that particular day. I'll make more mention of it as we get closer to the day. But we had been speaking quarterly at the library on subjects such as this. And we all need to know about our history.
Yes.
And it's not just our history, it's history of America.
That's
because
true.
We are in that fabric.
Yes.
So anybody
well, you certainly let Leon and myself know so we can beat out a hip, kick it off for you. Whatever you need us to do, you know, we're your friend. All you have to do is let us know now.
I know because you guys are active. You're not just a bunch of talk, not just a bunch of win. So we've a couple of minutes. Is there anybody else that has any comments before we because I want to hear from people. Anybody else? Here's your chance.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
If not, Mr. Abercrombie, one other thing I want to mention to you. I go to the barbershop, and the barbershop here where I go to is still a school. That's where you go to learn what's going on in your community and all. And there was a young man and his wife there, maybe in their early 20s, had their 2 boys there at the barbershop, and we old men had to take those young boys to school and let them know what happens in the barbershop. Now, one day, I want you to go with me. These young men had it going on in that barbershop, and it put me in the reminder of the way it was back in the day in the barbershop. That's where you learn at. That's where you learn what's going on in your community and everything. The barber's supposed to know everybody in town.
Right, and they do. Now,
yeah, they do.
We've got less than a minute. I want everybody that's listening to join us again next week. Invite somebody to join us because we've got good information. We do have the opportunity for you to talk. Join Marshall and others. We have a grand old time, and I like them because they are about action, not just talk. It's been my pleasure to be with you this week. We'll see you again next week at 4 p.m. on the same connection. And may you be blessed, my friends. Be blessed and learn, enlighten, share that enlightenment. Good evening. Have a blessed